Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Vav. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Rani and Frida Gindi and family in honor of Mrs. Frida Gindi and children, Jack Gindi, Norma, and Eddie Gindi and Esther Gindi. The skill of mitzvot. Today's daf also is being studied. Le'elu nishmat acham baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Avraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem tenichem began Eden. Amen. We begin today on daf kuf he amud bet, seven lines from where they get wide. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mishum bar kapara. Kol ha-morid dema'ot al adam kasher. Anybody that sheds tears for a kosher man, when he passes away, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sofran u-manihan bebet genazav. God counts those tears and places them in his treasury to show you how vital and important it is to cry over somebody that was kasher, that passed away. Shene Emar, and the Gemara substantiates this from a pasuk. The pasuk in Tehilim says, Nodi safarta ata sima dema'ati benodecha halo besifratecha. So the Rashi explains the beginning of this pasuk when it says, Nodi, the beginning of it says safarta. This is referring to, literally it means David's wanderings. God said, David says, God, you counted my wanderings. As we know, David HaMelech went from place to place as he was running away from his enemies. So he said, Dem'ati sima benodecha, take my tears and place them in your node, in your jar, so to speak. Halo b'sifratecha, aren't you counting them? So the Mefashim explained that it wouldn't make sense for David HaMelech or anybody to cry at any time in their life, only at the time of death. So what David HaMelech was saying was that when he would go to, let's say, mourn someone or give consolation to somebody, which Rashi also says can be the beginning of the pasuk, Nodi safarti ata lashon lanud lo. He quotes a pasuk from Iyov, where the pasuk is when one bows his head to console somebody. So David HaMelech says, at that time I cried, and God took my tears and counted them. So you see, from a pasuk in Tehilim, that God counts the tears of those that cry. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, kol ha-mit'asel behespedo shel hacham. Anybody that is lazy in eulogizing a talmid hacham, ra'uy lekobro behayav, he's worthy to be buried alive. That person that does not eulogize the talmid hacham properly is worthy to be buried alive. Shene emar, vayikberu oto bigbul nahalato. The pasuk is referring to when they buried Yoshua ben Nun. It says, they buried him bigbul nahalato on the border of his plot, betimnat selah, in the place called Timnat Serah, Asher Behar Ephraim, that is in the Mount Ephraim region, Misafon Lehar Gash, from the north of Mount Gash. Now the Gemara is going to find this difficult because the Navi felt it important to give us a point of demarcation where Yeshua was buried, and the Pasuk says north of Har Gash. Now Har Gash is not a famous place on the map that the Navi would go out of its way to tell us that that is the point of demarcation. So why would the Navi tell us north of Har Gash? So the Gemara says, Melamed Sheragash Alein Har Lehorgan. Gash also is like from the word Ragash, which means that the mountain trembled over them in order to kill them. Why? Because they did not eulogize Yeshua properly. How do we know that? So the bottom Tosfot tells us
משום דלא אשכען דכתיבה ויבכו אותו 30 יום כמו במשה ואהרון. When they buried Moshe and Aharon, Am Yisrael eulogized them for many days, for a month's period. And however, when it came to Yoshua ben Nun, it doesn't say that. So therefore, it seems they were lax. And because of that, it says, Har Gash, that the mountain was going to go over them in order to bury them. Now the Hatam Sofer, in the name of the Hafla'a, has a wonderful explanation why that should be so. Why should it be the punishment that the mountain should come and bury them alive? Because they didn't eulogize the Tamid Hacham. So he says like this. We learned earlier in the Masechet that when God gave us the Torah, He held the mountain over our heads. And He said, if you accept the Torah, fine. And if not, Sham Teheh Kivuratchem. Here will be your burial. And the question was asked on that Gemara, what do you mean? The Jewish people said, Naaseh v'nishma. The Jewish people accepted the Torah willingly. What was the need to suspend the mountain over their heads? So the Mefarshim explained that was referring to the Torah Sheba'al Peh, which means, yes, the Jewish people accepted Torah Shebichtav willingly, but it was the oral law, the interpretations of the Hakamim, that the Jewish people were skeptical if they would be able to handle it or not, and therefore God had to force them to accept the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Then when a rabbi passes away, so a rabbi is a embodiment of Torah Sheba'al Peh, of the oral law, and therefore when he's not eulogized properly, so that's again a defiance to the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So God, so to speak, brings back that mountain from Har Sinai that He was going to bury us with, because we questioned or we hesitated to accept it, and therefore He deserves to be buried under a mountain for not accepting the oral law as explained by Hachamin. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Abba Rav Yohanan, kol ha-mit'asel b'sbedo shel Chacham, anybody that is lazy at the eulogizing of a Tamid Chacham, eno ma'arich yamim. He does not have long days, which means he will not have a lengthy life. The Gemara says, mida keneged mida. It's a measure for measure. What's the measure for measure? As she says, hu lo nitabel al shenit katsru yemei ha'acham. He did not mourn on the fact that the rabbi's days were cut short. Af lechayav lo yachushim in ha-shamayim. So they won't pay any credence to his life either in the Shamayim. Shene emad, besa'asea, when I quote the Pasuk from Yeshaya, besa'asea, beshaleha, teribena. The word besa'asea is being learned as se'ah le'se'ah, measure for measure. This was actually referring to when the Egyptians got punished measure for measure for all that they did to the Jewish people during the bondage. For example, they threw the Jewish children into the water, layam, and at the end, all their children as well, all the Egyptians drowned in the water. So we see that God works with a sa'se'ah, with the se'ah le'se'ah, with the measure for measure system. The same thing applies to those that are lenient or lackadaisical, not mourning and eulogizing Tamidei Chachamim. Etive Rabbi Chaya bar Abba Rabbi Yohanan. So Rabbi Chaya bar Abba questioned Rabbi Yohanan. Says the Pasuk in Shofetim, Vaya'avdu ha'am et Hashem kol yemei Yoshua. Says the Jewish people served God throughout the life of Yoshua, v'chol yemei hazekenim, and throughout the times, the lifetime of the elders, asher erichu yamim aharei Yoshua, that they had long days after Yoshua. So it seems over here that the people in the times of Yoshua did enjoy longevity. And we just said that if you don't eulogize somebody properly, so you don't get long life. But it seems it says the zekinim that lived arichut yamim. So the Gemara says amar le bablae. He said the man from Babylonia, because he came from Babel. So he said yamim erichu shanim lo erichu. So that really means the days were long, but the years were not. Which means they ended their days good.
which means they had good days, they ended their lives good, but they did not have prolonged years. Yamim they had, which means their days were good, their life ended fine, but they were not prolonged years. So the Gemara says, and what's the proof? Because the Pasuk says, Asher he'erichu yamim, right, that they had long days. So the Gemara says, Ela me'ata, according to that, Lema'an yirbu yimechem v'imeh benechem yamim ve'lo shanim. When we say in the Kiryat Shema and the Pasuk, Lema'an yirbu yimechem, where God is blessing us, that you should have long days. Does that mean only days and not years? So the Gemara says, Beracha shani. No, their Pasuk is a beracha. It's a blessing. And the Pasuk is written as a blessing, so then already it writes Yemechem, but it's referring to also years. But that Pasuk in Yoshua and Yoshofetim was not a blessing. It was a factual Pasuk. It was saying that He'erichu Yamim, so the Gemara says Yamim, yes, but not Shani. Why? Because they did not eulogize Yoshua ben Nun properly. V'amarav Chaya Baraba Amarav Yohanan. Echad min ha'achin shemet. The Gemara says that if one of the brothers pass away in a family, yid'agu kol ha'achin kulam, so then all the brothers have to be scared that death might reach them as well. Had min b'nei ha'chabura shemet, tid'ag kol ha'chabura kula. If, let's say, one member of a group passes away, so then the entire group also must be fearful that now the midat ha'din, that the strict measure of God has reached them. Amri la, some say temet gadol. Some say it's referring to when the eldest of the household passed away. The amri la, and some say temet katan, when the youngest passed away. What's the logic of both? So that she says, top line, demet gadol, yesh lidog. When the oldest one dies, one should be concerned and worried, ho'il v'shalta midat ha'din b'rosh ha'bayit. Because since already the measure of strict justice reached the gadol of the bayit, the oldest of the house, so that's something to be scared about. Amri la demet katan. And some say when the youngest died, shebekidala, because when it comes to curses, matheilin min hakatan, we start from the smallest and we go up, as we learned by the snake that was cursed first, in any event, by Adam and Rishon, in the story of Adam and Havva. In any event, the Gemara clearly says that that is a sign that the entire group should be concerned. Mashal is, let's say you have a group of stones that are all piled on each other, and one stone is taken away, so now the other stones are in trouble, because they also now have a better chance of collapsing. And therefore, the same thing, when one in the group passes away, so now the group loses, so to speak, a stability, and therefore should be concerned. And now we continue the Gemara, v'chol ha'mekalkelin peturin. We said in our Mishnah that anything that is destructive, that's called a kilkul, and it was done on Shabbat, so the one that does it is patur from a korban hatat. Kol ha'mekalkelin peturin. Tani Rabbi Abhu kamed Rabbi Yohanan. Rabbi Abhu brought a braita in front of Rabbi Yohanan, and he said, Kol ha'mekalkelin peturin. Yes, indeed, all destructive melachot on Shabbat will be patur from korban, chutz mechovel umavir, except for two cases. Chovel is one that makes a wound, for example, one that wounds his friend, which would be, let's say, isur on Shabbat, and let's say some will say that would be the toldah of Shohet, and Umavir. Mavir is lighting a fire. Even though in both cases you're destroying, when one makes a wound, he's damaging, and when one lights a fire, also he's burning the wood, that's also damaging. Still,
These are the exceptions of the rule. He's going to be hayav. Now, how do we know that you hayav on these? So now she tells us on the third line, chutz mechobel be'adam temekalkelu v'hayav. How do you know ditnan? Because we learned in Masechet Baba Kama hachovel b'chavero b'shabbat. If a person, let's say, inflicts a wound in his friend on Shabbat, patur milishalem, he does not have to pay damages. Why? Because since he's getting sekila for transgressing abura, we have the principle of kimne bidarabamine, that a person does not incur two punishments, so therefore he gets the stricter of the punishment. So, but what do you see? That if a person is chovel on Shabbat, he does get punished, even though it is a kilkul. And where do you see avara? So that she brings out umavir et tagadish. Let's say somebody burns a field on Shabbat, mekalkelu. Obviously, that is destructive. V'hayav, but he's guilty. How do we know? Kedetan also, because it says in Baba Kama, v'hu shedlik et tagadish patur min hatashlumin. If a person lights a field on Shabbat, he's exempt from paying. Why? Again, same principle. Because since he pays with his life, so therefore, we give him the stricter of the punishments. So Rav Abhu brought a braita that said, yes, but there are two exceptions. The two exceptions are chovel and mavir, and even though they are destructive melachot, one is going to be hayav in any event. Amar Le, when the Yohanan heard that braita, he said, puk, which means go out, tane le bara, take this braita outside, which means that Yohanan did not accept the authenticity of this braita. Yohanan cannot accept such a braita. So the Gemara says, chovel u'mavir in a mishnah, which means chovel and mavir, those two that you brought as exceptions, it's not an exception. Meaning, kol ha-mekalkelin peturin, including chovel and mavir. That braita is not the proper text. That braita is not a legitimate braita of Abu. And therefore, when it says kol ha-mekalkelin peturin, there are no exceptions. Chovel and mavir also. Aye, but we just said we have cases where chovel and mavir indeed is hayav. So the Gemara says, "V'im timsel omar mishnah." And if you want to keep this braita legitimate, which means if you want to keep the text of this braita, you're going to have to learn it in a special case. Chovel betzarich lekalbo, mavir betzarich leafro. You're going to have to say the case is not a destructive chovel, but a constructive chovel. How? Where you, let's say, made a habala, a wound in an animal, in order to use its blood, in order to feed the dog, one's dog. So there already, that's a habala, yes, you made a kilkul in the animal, but it has a constructive purpose. You need the blood in order to feed your dog. Or let's say you were mavir, you made a fire, and you need the ashes of the fire. In that case, fine, that doesn't go against the principle of kol ha-mekalkelin peturin. Because I'll tell you, yes, really, all the melachot, if they're destructive, are patur. Aye, but the braita says, except for chovel u'mavir, it doesn't mean except for chovel u'mavir. It's just giving you two examples. It means except for melachot that are done constructively, which means even though it's destructive, because yes, you made a fire, but if there's a constructive benefit from it, they'll be considered hayav. Now again, the braita doesn't mean only to single out according to this chovel u'mavir. For that matter, any destructive melacha that you can make a constructive purpose, it'll be hayav. The braita just gave an example of chovel u'mavir. So that comes out, we have a machloket between Rabbi Abhu and Rabbi Yohanan. Rabbi Abhu is coming along to say that what? Chovel u'mavir are the exception, and they're always going to be hayav. Where comes Rabbi Yohanan at this point, and he says, no, chovel u'mavir can only be hayav in a case where it is constructive, chobev v'sarich ledam, to feed the caliph, and mav'ir, where you need the ashes. Comes the Gemara and says, the Gemara is going to ask a question now on Lav Abhu. V'ha'anan tenan, but didn't we learn in our Mishnah Rav Abhu, kol ha'mekalkilin peturin? Which means the Mishnah clearly says, kol ha'mekalkilin peturin, all destructive melachot are patur. So how could you come along and tell me, except for Hovelu Mav'ir? The Mishnah, by using the word kol, it means it's including everything. Which means, according to Rabbi Yochanan, this is not a question. Because he said, I agree. Chovel and Mavir is also patur. Only in a case where you need the dam, where it's constructive, or you need the ashes, where it's constructive. But the Vabahu, he did not make that difference. He just said, except for Chovel and Mavir, Mashma, in all cases. So what do you do with the Mishnah that says, kol ha'mekalkelin peturin avabhu? How do you answer that? So the Gemara says, matnitin Rabbi Yehuda, braita Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Which means there is an opinion out there of the Tana Rabbi Yehuda that will indeed hold that mekalkel is patur in all cases, even by habura, even by havara. Who is this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? We don't know. Rashi says in his first pshat, and I quote inside, matnitin Rabbi Yehuda, de'itle mekalkel b'habura patur, ve'lo itparesh hecha. But I don't know where it is. It means Rashi's telling in his first pshat, we have to accept the Gemara. Gemara is telling you know who the author of this Mishnah is? The author of this Mishnah that said, kol ha'mekalkelin peturin, is following Rabbi Yehuda. That Rabbi Yehuda has an opinion that all things that are destructive are patur, including mav'ir, including chovel. Now, that's Rashi's first pshat. But Rashi then offers a second explanation. And he says, now, you know what this Rabbi Yehuda is? It's the famous opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that we learned throughout Masechet Shabbat. The opinion that says, Melacha she'ena tziricha legufa hayav. Which again, we learned Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that what? That even though the Melacha was done, let's say, not constructively in the sense that you wanted to do the Melacha per se, but like we learned in Kointa Shitat Rashi, you reacted to circumstances that you'd rather, let's say, not have had to dealt with from the beginning. So that was called the Melacha She'en HaSidikha LeGufa. You don't need the actual result of the Melacha per se. Still, Rabbi Yehuda held Hayav in such a case. Now, based on the Yehuda's opinion of Melacha She'en HaSidikha LeGufa, Rashi says he will be the author of this Mishnah. How? So let's read Rashi inside together. Veli nir'eh. We're reading in Rashi, Dibura matchil matnitin Rabbi Yehuda, and it's two lines into Rashi, Velam midnun, veli nir'eh. Matnitin Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. De'amar, melacha she'en asirilcha legufa hayav aleh. Hilkach, therefore, Hiyuva dechovel, the case of when a person, let's say, makes a blemish, Bitzarich lekalbo. I'll tell you the case is where you need the blood for the dog, Umavir Bitzarich leafro, and in the case of Habara, where you need it for the ashes, Mashkahatla. That would be the case. Why? Even though technically he is mekalkel, yes, he caused a wound in the animal. Yes, he burnt, which is destructive. However, metakenu etzel ahirim. But bottom line, there was something constructive that came out. For his dog, this was beneficial. He ate the blood. For the purpose of the ashes now, he benefited. So Rabbi Yehuda, ki ay gavna melachahu, which is Rabbi Yehuda will say, this indeed does qualify as a legitimate melacha, mishum tikun achirim. Because bottom line, since something constructive came out of it, so that will be considered hayav. But if it is totally destructive, where there is no positive that came out of it at all, patur, which means Rabbi Yehuda that holds, melacha she'en atzericha legufa, meaning, do I need this habura per se? No, I don't need this habura. I really need the blood that comes out of it. So as a matter, Rabbi Yehuda says, melacha she'en atzericha legufa is chayav. However, it's got to be a tikkun. What's the tikkun? Tikkun in this case is, I could use the blood for the animal. So therefore he'll say, hayav. When I burn, do I need the fire per se, the melacha? No. Ela wat? But I can use the ashes that come out of it. That's a byproduct. Therefore it's a melacha she'en asinicha legufa. I don't need the goof of the melacha itself. Doesn't matter. The Biuda says, melacha she'en atzidicha legufa, hayav, so long as there's tikkun. Even though the tikkun now came as a result, which means either the blood, I could benefit from feed my dog, or I could use the ashes for whatever purpose, but I need it. So therefore I'll say, the Mishnah that said, kol ha-mekalkelin peturin, that could be going according to the opinion of the Biyuda. And he will say, for that matter, as well, Chovel and Mav'ir is also Patur. Because bottom line, it's a Mekalkel. He agrees, Kol. Kol means everything. Every Mekalkel, including Chovel and Mav'ir. Oh, but what about Chovel and Mav'ir for Tikkun? Oh, then the Biyuda will say, even though it's a Melachash and a Sericha Legufa, but since there's a tikkun attached to it, so he will say you're going to be hayav. So therefore the only case where the Biyuda will say that you are hayav in chovel and mav'ir is only when there is a tikkun attached to it. However, if there's no tikkun attached to it, meaning it's total kilkul, for example, a regular case where a guy went and he damaged the animal, that already is total kilkul. Didn't need blood, didn't have any purpose, kol ha-mekalkelin peturin. Or a person just went arbitrarily and burnt something. He doesn't need anything from it, so that's a total kilkul. Ah, so when does the Biyuda say, hayav? He'll only say in a case where, let's say you made the damage, right? Now even though technically in the melacha itself, you didn't need the melacha. Geez, the wound itself is a melacha she'en atzidicha legufa. Geez, in the wound itself, you don't need the wound per se. The blood that comes out of it, you'll benefit. That's already considered a tikkun. Albeit it's not a tikkun in the melacha itself. It's a byproduct. But still, the Yehuda that says melacha she'en atzirika legufa is hayav. That can be hayav. And it's considered tikkun. And therefore, that will be the author of our Mishnah. Now we go further. Braita, and the Braita that wants to tell us that the Braita wants to tell us that Chovel and Mav'ir is indeed Hayav, right? Because that's the text we had in the Braita. The Braita said, Chutz mechovel u'mav'ir. I'll tell you, that's Rabbi Shimon. That's following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Now, what is Rabbi Shimon's opinion throughout the Talmud? Melacha she'ena tzericha legufa really is patur. Which means Rabbi Shimon holds that really in these cases, one should be patur. In all cases, meaning even in the case of Chovel v'tzarich and using the blood after, or the case of Havara, these cases you should really be patur. However, Rabbi Shimon has a special derasha to tell us that these two are exceptional cases. What's the derasha? So the Gemara says, "My tamad Rabbi Shimon." What's the reason of Rabbi Shimon that says what the chovel and mavir are indeed going to be hayav? Midit starich kral mishra mila. We have a special pasuk in the Torah that says, "Ubayom Hashemini Yimol Betzaron Lato," to teach me that what Brit Milah is permissible on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, "Ha Chovel BeAlma Hayav," which means must be that Chovel generally must be Hayav. That's why the Tos. What is the Brit Milah at the end? Brit Milah is Chovel. You're making a damage, right? You're cutting. So they're making a wound. And still what? The Torah comes along and says, you're right. All over, Chovel is Hayav. But when it comes to a Brit Milah and Shabbat, I'll tell you, it's a mitzvah. It's okay. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, I have a special Gezerat Ketuv to tell me, Chovel is different. Which means, all Chovel, even Chovel that is a Kilkul, that Chovel is going to be Hayav on Shabbat. Any Chovel is Hayav. Even though it's a Kilkul, it's the exception to the rule. It's the exception to the rule. Umidda'asar rachmana hava'ara gabe bat kohen. Now we know there's a Torah law that says, ubat kohen ki techel lisnot et avia hi mehalelet ba'esh tesaref. A bat kohen, let's say she was engaged or married, and she committed adultery. So the Torah says our punishment is to saref. She gets burned. How do we burn her? We take lead, hot lead, and you burn the lead, and you give it to her to drink. Well, normal punishment for adultery is henek. The punishment for a bat kohen that makes znut is serefa. So the Torah says, how do we know that if, let's say, a bat kohen is guilty, that you cannot inflict her the punishment of serefa on Shabbat? We have a pasuk, lo teba'aru esh bechol moshvotechem beyom ha-shabbat. Bechol moshvotechem means in all your dwellings. Moshvot is referring specifically to the dwellings of Bet Din, which is even Bet Din is not allowed to inflict the serefa punishment on Shabbat. So again, the Gemara says, umedasar rachman ha-ba'ara gabe bat kohen. And the fact that Torah says it is forbidden, that even though such avara is a kilkul, right? Such avara, you're burning the ash, you're burning the coal over there, you're burning the lead, I should say, that's a kilkul. Shma mina mavir ba'al mahayav. So you see, must be that mavir, even though it is destructive, it is going to be hayav. So there was a braita that said, Kol hamekalkelin peturin chutz mimavir umehabel is Rabbi Shimon, which means Rabbi Shimon, based on these gezerat hakatuvs by Mila and by Bat Kohen, learned that these are exceptional, even though they are indeed kilkul, which means comes out over here, very interesting point. Comes out Rabbi Shimon is more mahmir than Rabbi Yehuda. Because whereas Rabbi Yehuda said, Chovel and Mav'ir can be Hayav only when they are constructive, only when you're using the dam and only when you're using the ashes. Whereas Rabbi Shimon said, no, these are the total exceptions in all cases. And now Rabbi Yehuda comes back and replies to Rabbi Shimon and says, Rabbi Yehuda, says, Adam metakenu. Says, I'll tell you why you need a pasuk to tell us that Brit Milah is permissible. You know why? Because I would think it's asur. Because bottom line, when you do a Brit Milah, yes, it's a kilkul, but it's a kilkul that has a tikkun. Kedera v'asher, te'amara v'asher, mali letaken milah, mali letaken keli. What's the difference if I fix a vessel or I fix the milah? Which is bottom line, I enhanced. I did something positive. Like you said, the mitzvah. So when Rabbi Yehuda says, my principle still applies in this derasha, meaning, really I would tell you that the milah should be forbidden. Why? Because it's a kilkul that has a tikkun. And what's the rule of Rabbi Yehuda? Kilkul has a tikkun, really should be asur. Comes the Torah and says, no, Bayom Hashemini Yimol Besar Onato. And then he says, and regarding the reason why it's asur to burn the Bat Kohen on Shabbat, Mali Lebashel Petila, Mali Lebashel Sammanim. We know it's forbidden to, let's say, burn
sammanim, right? The Mishkan, they used to boil the dyes in order to paint the skins of the Mishkan, right? That's clearly bishul. What's the difference between that, that's constructive, to that of burning or boiling the lead in order to burn the Bat Kohen? That's also considered constructive, which is now I'm making the lead viable in order to fulfill the mitat betin. So therefore, the Biyuda says, I have no problem why these pesukim are written. Adraba, these pesukim are indeed tikkun, and therefore, if we're not for the pasuk of milah, inakanamem, milah would be asur. And clearly, the reason why habara of this type is asur, because it is indeed a tikkun, but a regular kilkul of havara and chovel indeed would be patur. And that's again, the Mishnah is following the Yehuda and the Braita Rabbi Shimon. I repeat one more time. The Mishnah that said, kol ha-mekalkelin peturin, meaning kol, every mekalkel, including chovel and including mavir, that's a Yehuda, because it is destructive. Granted, if you need it, if you took the blood of it, or let's say you took the ashes of it, the Yehuda will say, even though it's a melacha she'ina sidicha legufa, so I don't need the actual habura per se, or the burning per se, doesn't matter, he holds melacha she'ina sidicha legufa hayav, where there is a tikkun. The braita that said, no, the braita that said, well, kol ha-mekalkelin peturim chutz ve-chovel ha-mavir, in all cases, even when they are destructive, that will be the Bishon, which even though the Bishon normally holds melachas and asidik gufa patur. So therefore, technically, even in a case where, let's say, you took the blood for it and there was a benefit, still you should say patur. Doesn't matter. In this case, we have gezerot katuv to tell us that indeed you're going to be hayav. Comes the Gemara and says further, Shi'ur Amla Ben. We learned in the Mishnah that if a person, let's say, is bleaching on Shabbat, he bleaches the wool. So what's the Shi'ur of bleaching the wool? How much wool? So the Gemara says, the Mishnah said, Kimlo Rohav Hasit Kaful. A double seat. So the Gemara wants to know, what is the Shi'ur? Rabbi Yosef Mahve kaful. Rabbi Yosef made a hand gesture to show that it's double. What is a seat? So that she tells us it's the distance between the index finger, which is called in Hebrew the etzba, and the middle finger, which is called the ama. She says if a person extends those two fingers as wide as he can, the distance between them is called a seat. Now a seat kaful would be twice that measurement. So therefore the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef showed a seat kaful with his hands, which means could be he extended both of his hands and went, you know, on his right hand and his left hand, or he went twice with his hand to show a double seat. Gemara says, Rav Chiya bar Ameh mahve pashut. Well, Rav Chiya bar Ameh did not indicate it twice, he showed it once. Now, how could you show a seat kaful once? So that she tells us that the distance between the etzba and the amma, if you double it, it's the same distance between the etzba and the agudal. Agudal being the thumb. So therefore, the Gemara is telling us with Rav Chiya that he just made an indication like this, meaning he showed the distance between his thumb and his point the finger in order to show the shiur of seed kaful. Comes the Mishnah and says, now we discuss the law of tzad, the law of trapping. Rabbi Yehuda omer hatzad sipor lemigdal. If a person, let's say, traps a bird in a closet, migdal over here is referring to an aron, which would be like a closet, Vitzvi labayit, or let's say traps a deer in a house, in that case you're going to be hayav. Now why does Rabbi Yehuda say a bird only in a small area like a closet? Why not is it considered, why not trapping a bird in a house? So that she tells us, because she really can't trap him in a house, because the house is big, he can fly out the windows. However, when you get him in a closet, so he's in a contained area, that's considered that you trapped him. So again, a tzipor only is considered trapped in a nigdal, it's a confined area, where a tzvi is considered a deer even in a house. V'achamim omrim, tzipor l'migdal. How can you say, I agree with you, Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to the bird, migdal. However, v'tzvi, when it comes to a deer, I hold that it's considered trapped, not only in a house, but even legina, ulhased, ulbibarim. I think the Aleph says lebayit. So therefore he says lebayit. I agree in the house. But even then, gina would be the garden. Hased would be, let's say, the courtyard. Ulbibarim would be different types of enclosures that the Gemara is going to discuss, the size of them. Hayav, you're going to be hayav as well. Comes the Gemara and says, comes the Mishnah and says, Rabban Shimon min Gamliel Omer, lo kol habibarim shavim. Not all enclosures are equal. Some enclosures will be considered trapping if you put the animal in them, and some not. He doesn't give us his difference yet, but the Gemara will give us the difference. Zaklal. This is the principle regarding trapping. Mehusar seda patur. If let's say you have a certain, let's say, type of animal that it's hard to trap it, which is hard to catch it in the place where it is, mehusar seda, which means in the area that it is, it's hard to trap, patur. Because that you didn't trap it. That's not considered trapping. It's still considered mehusar seda. She'eno mehusar seda. Which means, if let's say it's easy to trap it, which means now that you put it in a spot where let's say it's not mehusar seda anymore, now it's easy to grab it, let's say, the Gemara will say, hayav, then you're going to be hayav. So again, we read the klal. Mehusar seda, if it's still lacking trapping, mean it's not trapped, so you're patur. She'eru mehusar seda, but if it's not lacking being trapped, so then obviously you're going to be hayab. Comes the Gemara and says, Tanana tam, we learned in Masechet Betza. En sadin dagim minabibarim biyom tov. We're not allowed to trap fish from the bibarim, from the ponds, on Yom Tov. Catching fish on Yom Tov is asur. The Gemara there explains it's the type of melacha that you could have done from before Yom Tov. And therefore they do not allow it on Yom Tov. And since now the fish are mukseh, ve'en notnim lifnehem mezonot. For that matter, you're not allowed to feed the fish on Yom Tov, because feeding them would require terha, would require exertion, and the Chachamim do not want us to exert for something that is mukseh on Yom Tov. So again, you're not allowed to catch the fish from the bibarim on Yom Tov, nor are you allowed to feed them. Aval, however, tzadin haya ve'of, you can trap animals and birds on Yom Tov, you can trap them. Ve'notim lefnem mezonot, and for that matter, since they're non-mukseh items, because you can trap them to slaughter them, therefore, you're also allowed to feed them on Yom Tov. Urminu, we have a contradiction. The Gemara says, Bibarin shel hayot v'shel ofot. If you have, let's say, these enclosures of hayot and ofot, v'shel dagim, and for that matter, the ponds where the fish are, en sadin mehem b'yom tov. You're not allowed to trap them on Yom Tov. Sounds like all of them now, including the Haya and the Of. Then, and you're not allowed to even feed any of these. Kasha Haya Achaya Kasha Ofot Ofot. So now we have a double question. Because the first Braita told us, actually the first Mishnah in Metzah told you can actually trap Hayot and Ofot on Yom Tov from the bibarim, from the enclosures. And now you're telling me that you're not allowed to trap hayot and ofot on Yom Tov from these bibarim. So make up your mind. The fish is consistent. fish, you told me in the Mishnah and the Braita, you can never trap fish on Yom Tov. We're good with that. Problem is, the Gabed Hayanda off. Make up your mind. The Mishnah, you told me it's okay to trap them on Yom Tov. The Braita, you told me, it's not okay. It's asur to trap them on Yom Tov. Haya, ahaya, ofot, ahofot. It's a question. Comes the Gemara and says, Bishlama achaya achaya lakasha. We can answer the stira, the contradiction from the animals. I can say, ha Rabbi Yehuda, ha Rabbanan. I can make a difference between the Yehuda and Rabbanan. What is the difference? We read Rashi. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, hahi de'en sadin. That what it said, you can't trap them, I'll say, Rabbi Yehudai. I'll say it's a biyuda. Debematniti lo hashiv latzeda achich nasu labayit. According to the biyuda, for example, a deer. When is it considered trapped? Only when it's in the house it's considered trapped already. Right? Means according to the biyuda, if it's in a bibar, if it's in an enclosure, so it's not considered trapped. If it's not considered trapped yet, then you come and trap it. You'll be hayav. So therefore, the braita that says that it is forbidden to trap a chaya, I'll tell you, it's going like Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, I'll tell you, since it's in the bibar, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, something that's in the bibar is not trapped. Right? Because where is it trapped according to Rabbi Yehuda? In the house. So therefore, it'll be asur on Yom Tov. Where is, according to Hachamim, once it's in a bibar, that's considered trapped already, right? When you have a deal, let's say in a bibar, that's considered trapped. So if it's there already before Yom Tov, so when you take it from the bibar, it's not considered trapping because it was already trapped already. So that's the way we can explain the contradiction between Haya and Chaya Ela Ofot Ofot Kasha. But how are we going to explain the contradiction between Ofot? Because everybody agreed that once you have the bird, right? Once you have a bird and you place it in a migdal, for example, a closet or a confined area, then it's considered trapped already. In a closet, let's say. Rabbi Yehuda and Hachamim agreed on that. So then how could you answer the contradiction of birds? Why one case the bird is permissible and one case it is forbidden? So the Gemara says, V'chitema, maybe you'll say like this. Ofot ha'ofot nameh lakasha. Also no question why. I'll say like this. Ha bibibar mekora, ha bibibar she'eno mekora. I'll tell you, one case is talking where the enclosure had a roof over it, and one is talking where the enclosure did not have a roof over it. Meaning, if it had a roof over the bibar, it's trapped already. And therefore, be mutar en yom tov to take it out, because it was trapped. If it's a bibar that doesn't have a roof, it's not considered trapped, and therefore be asur on Yom Tov, which means I could make the chiluk between bibar mekora and bibar she'eno mekora. So comes the Gemara and says, "Ve'habayit de mekorahu." Everybody agrees a house is roofed, and still uben Rabbi Yehuda uben the Rabbanan. And according to all opinions, Sipor le Migdal in, that a Sipor is only considered trapped in a Migdal, in a smaller area. Le Bayit lo. And therefore, I don't care, even if the Bibar has a roof on it, it's not considered trapped, therefore it should be considered Asur according to all opinions. So we're stuck. We can't answer the stira between the Mishnah, the Braita, and Masechet Betzah, legabe the Tzipor. Legabe the Haya, we answered it. Which means, the Haya, you can say, the Mishnah that was Matir, is talking in the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Right?
which is, I could tell you the animal is in a bibar, I'm sorry. If the animal's in a bibar, so according to the Biyuda, that's not considered trapped, and therefore it's asur to trap it on Yom Tov. Whereas, according to the Hachamim, if the animal is in a bibar, it's trapped already, so therefore it would be mutar to take it from the bibar on Yom Tov. But we're running into a problem, how to answer ofot, ha-ofot. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava Baravuna Hacha Besipor Dror Askinan. We're talking about over here a special type of bird that's called the Sipor Dror, which means it's like a wild bird. That she says, Gemara says, Nefi She'ena Mekabelet Marut, meaning it doesn't accept any mastery over it. Netana de Berebi Ishmael, Lama Nikra Shema Tzipor Dror. Why is the bird called a Tzipor Dror? Why do they call it a Dror bird? Mepne Shedara Bebayit Kemasadeh. Because when you trap it in the house, it lives in the house like it lives in the field, which means you can't trap it in a house. And therefore, I'll tell you like this. Our Mishnah that said that the only way you could trap a bird is in a migdal, that was talking about Sipor Dror. That was a special wild bird that you can't trap it in a house. But regular birds, you'd be able to trap in a house, meaning in a closed area. And therefore, I can go back and answer the Braita and the Mishnah. And I can say as follows. The Mishnah that allowed me to trap birds on Yom Tov, I'll say it's talking about a bibar that had a roof on it. And since it had a roof on it, and we're talking about a regular bird, so a regular bird in a place where there's a roof, it's considered trapped already. Therefore, it would be permissible to take it on Yom Tov. The Braita that said it's asur to trap birds in the bibar, I'll say it's talking about a bibar that's unroofed. And therefore, it's not considered trapped. And therefore, if I'm going to take it on Yom Tov, I am trapping on Yom Tov. That's the way I can answer. So by saying that our Mishnah was referring to a wild bird, the Sipor Dror, and only in that type of bird, it doesn't get trapped in a house. But every other type of bird does get trapped in a house. So therefore, I can make a difference between Bibar Mekora and a bibar she'eno mekora. Again, if the bibar is mekora, so then it would be considered trapped already. Therefore, on Yom Tov you could take it. If it's not mekora, it's not considered trapped, and therefore it would be asur. The Gemara says, wait, hashta de'atit le'achi. Once already you're coming to this point, meaning where you're able to answer the braita by birds, following the rabbi's opinion, which means according to this, the Braitot both are concurring with the opinion of Hachamim. Haya ahaya namela kasha. I could already answer haya, the contradiction, according to the opinion of the rabbis. How? Habibi bar gadol, habibi bar katan. I can make a difference. I could say it makes a difference if it's a bibar gadol or a bibar katan. Meaning, a bibar gadol, a big enclosure, the animal's not considered trapped. And since it's not considered trapped, when you're going to trap it on Yom Tov from a bibar gadol, it's a problem. I have. However, bibar katan, a small enclosure, is considered trapped already. Therefore, on Yom Tov, it'll be permissible. The only question is, echi dame bibar gadol, echi dame bibar katan. You know, what's the barometer? What do you consider a bibar gadol and a bibar katan? Amar Rav Asher, kol hecha drahit batre. If you run after the animal, umatela behad shichya, and you could catch the animal in one lunge, bibar katan. That's already considered bibar katan. But if it's small enough, where after one lunge you can catch the animal, that's considered bibar katan, and the animal is considered already trapped. V'idak bibar gadol. Not everything else will be considered a bibar gadol.
Iname, another answer. Kolecha denafil tula diktalim ahadade. If the shade of the walls overlaps each other, bibar katan, meaning, let's say you have a small bibar, the walls are the same height, but it's enclosed, so now the sun on one side, let's say, would bring shade from the wall, let's say to 3/4 of the bibar. And then when the sun is on the other side, the sun will also bring shade to 3/4 of the bibar. That means the shades at different points of the day do overlap each other. That's bibar katan. V'idach bibar gadol. But everything else is bibar gadol, meaning let's say the shade would only go to half, and the other side the shade only goes to half, so therefore that would be considered bibar gadol. Third way to judge. Inam v'inameh kolecha deleka ukse ukse. So long as there's no corners that the animal can escape into, bibar katan. V'idach bibar gadol. But everything else is a bibar gadol. So if it's like rounded, when the animal really can't escape into a corner, so that's already considered bibar katan. However, if it has corners where the animal can escape, that would be considered bibar gadol. So bottom of the Gemara gave us now three different answers how to analyze bibar katan, bibar gadol. But let's just review what we did. We brought a braita in we brought a Mishnah in Masechet Betza. The Mishnah clearly said that it is permissible. Again, the Mishnah, Tranatam, En Sadim Dagim, Ve'en Udim Mezor, Avat Sadin Hayava Of. It is permissible to trap animals and birds from the Bibarim on Yom Tov. The Braita on the second Mitzah said the exact opposite. Now we are answering. How are we going to answer? Haya Ahaya La Kashya. Ofot ha-ofot lo kasha. I'll tell you, haya ha-haya la kasha, we're talking about different size bibarim. Bibar gadol, we'll say what? The animal's not considered trapped in a bibar gadol, and therefore you can't take it from there on Yom Tov, because it's considered trapping. However, if the animal's in a bibar katan, since it's considered trapped already in the bibar katan, it would be mutar to take it on Yom Tov. What's considered bibar gadol? What's considered bibar katan? The Gemara gave three answers. How do we answer ofot ha-ofot? I'll tell you that we're talking about, again, bibar mekora, bibar she'eno mekora. If the bibar has a roof over it, so therefore the bird gets trapped already in there, you can take it on Yom Tov because it's trapped. If it's bibar she'eno mekora, so then already it's not trapped, therefore be forbidden to take the bird out on Yom Tov. I, the Mishnah that said the only way you can trap a bird is in a small little migdal. That was a special bird called a spor, sipor, dror, that's not trapped even in a house. Comes again when I said the Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer. Now we learned in our Mishnah, he said, lo kol habibarim shavim. Now, what is Rabban Shimon Gamliel saying? Not all bibarim are the same. Now, that's really what the rabbis were saying, which is now that we've read this whole Gemara, and we understand that Tanakama of our Mishnah that said bibarim, there's different types of bibarim. There's the small bibar, and there's the big bibar. And then so when Rabban Shimon Gamliel comes along and says, hey, not all bibarim are similar, so that really sounds like he's explaining the opinion of Tanakama. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yosef, Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Shimon, Halakha, Rabban Shimon Gamliel. He says, indeed, Halakha does follow Rabban Shimon Gamliel, that what? It depends. If you put it in a bibar gadol, it's not considered trapping. If you put it in a bibar katan, it is considered trapping. So Amar le Abaye, Abaye comes along and says, Halakha, you tell me the Halakha follows Rabban Shimon Gamliel, Michlal de Palige. I'm implying from your words that it sounds like for me that the rabbis argue on this, which means there's no machloket on this. Why did you say halacha ke Rabban Shimon Gamliel? If anything, you should have said halacha ke hachamim. Or don't say anything because there's no machloket on this. And the fact that you tell me halacha follows Rashbag sounds like that why you hold that the rabbis are arguing. And we just learned in the previous sugya that the rabbis are not arguing. They agreed to this chiluk between bibar gadol and bibar katan. Amar lev. So Rabbi Yosef says, my nafka lach mina. What do you care? What are you making a nafka mina? Which means, did I say something wrong? meaning kol sheken I'm right. Which is, all I said was halakha is like Rabban Shimon Gamliel. Now you come along and say, oh, how could you say that? It sounds like the rabbis are arguing and they're not. So Rabbi Yosef says, Hazal Gomaru, kol sheken I'm right. It's called the Mosul halakha follows Rabban Shimon Gamliel. If you tell me, especially if the rabbis are not arguing, so what are you bothering me for? Did I say something wrong? If you tell me that they're not arguing, so kol sheken that I'm right. So Abaye didn't like that. Amar le, gamra gemor, your traditions or your halachot that you're saying, zimurtate, what is it, a song? Meaning just like a song you say without thought. You just sing it. What do you just spit out halachot without thinking like a song? Which means when you make a statement, you have to think before you say it. The way you said it over there gives a bad implication. You said halakha kerabagre, so you're answering me, oh, what's the difference? What's the difference? What do you mean, halakhot are a song over here? Gamra gamal zemurtate? Your traditions that you say are like songs, meaning you don't say them with thought, which means either you should have said halakha kahakamin, or you shouldn't say anything. But to say that halakha follows rashbag, you have to know that your words imply something that's not true. And don't answer me back, oh, what's the difference? Of course you can that I'm right. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Braita. The Braita says, Hasad Sivi Some. What's the deen if a person traps a blind deer? Viyashin, or a deer that's sleeping. And the question is, you might say he's trapped already. Because since he's blind, where's he going? Well, since he's sleeping, he's considered trapped. So trapping something that's trapped, that's the question. Kibbutz says, doesn't matter. Hayav. You're hayav. Even though he's blind, even though he's sleeping, you're guilty. Higer v'zaken. But if you trap, let's say, a lame deer, or a zaken, an old deer, obviously that's limited in how fast it can run. V'chole, or for that matter, a sick deer, patur. In that case, patur. So Gemara asks, Amar le'abaye le'rav Yosef, Mai shena hane, or Mai shena hane? What's the difference? Jeez, what's the difference between a blind one and a sick one? So the Gemara says, Hane avidi le'ribuye. You know, a blind deer or a sleeping deer, when you go to trap it, they slip away. Le'ribuye means they'll slip away. And therefore, they're not considered trapped. And therefore, if you trap them, it's going to be hayav. Haneh, but a sick deer, lo avidi l'ribuyo, or a lame deer, they're not slipping away. And therefore, they're considered trapped already. Therefore, if you catch them on Shabbat, you didn't trap them. They were trapped from the beginning. That, Tanya, the Gemara, asks the question from a Braita. Chole hayav. Braita says if you trap a sick deer, you're indeed hayav. So you see what? Even the sick deer does slip away. Amar Rav Sheshat Nakashya. Ha bechole mahmat eshata. Ha bechole mahmat upsena. Depends why he's sick. If he's sick because of fever, eshata is fire, right? Fever. So such an animal, if you trap it, you hayav. Why? Because if it has fever, it'll slip away. Therefore, it's not considered trapped. However, if it's sick because of upsina, meaning it's fatigued, it's tired, so therefore it's not slipping away. Therefore, it's considered trapped already, and therefore you're not going to be hayav. So it makes a difference if the sickness is fever or the sickness is fatigue. Tanu Rabbanan, hatzad hagabin. If a person traps, hagabin would be grasshoppers. Gazin is also a type of grasshopper. Sir'in, hornets. Yetushin would be mosquitoes. Beshabbat, all these type of items, if you trap them, hayav. Devere b'me'ir. Hachamim omrim, hachamim say no. Kol shebimino nitzod hayav. Any type of item that its species is normally trapped, that type of item would be hayav. Vechol she'en b'mino nitzod patur. And any type of species that's not normally trapped, you'll be patur. Meaning, let's say grasshoppers, which people normally trap them to eat. Okay, so such a thing, you'll be hayav. But regarding, let's say, a hornet or a mosquito, since people don't trap these items, you'll be patur. So now, can we make a difference in bimino nitzod or not? Tanya idach, we have a braita. The braita says, Hatzad hagabim. The person, let's say, traps grasshoppers, bishat hatal, in the morning at the time that the dew is falling, patur. Person's patur at that time. Why? So that she tells us, because in the morning they become blinded. And therefore, in the morning, since they blind the grasshoppers, so therefore they're trapped already. So you trap a grasshopper in the early morning when the dew is falling, you're patur. Bishat tashrab, but if you trap it, let's say, when the intense heat is out, you're going to be chayav. Why? Because then already they're not trapped, and therefore trapping them is chayav. El Azar ben Mahabai Omer, imayu mekalchotu ba'ot patur. If they were coming in swarms, then you'll be patur. Which means, if let's say you have a swarms of grasshoppers are coming at you, patur. The logic being, it's easy to trap them. They're not trapped, which means you just have to grab them, which means already they're easily accessible because they're all over. So now the Gemara wants to know, when Elazar ben Mahabai made his statement that if they come in swarms, that you're patur, in which case was he talking? Iba'yelu Elazar ben Mahabai areshaka'e o asefaka'e. Was he going on the first statement, meaning the first statement of the Braita was what? That you're allowed to trap grasshoppers in the morning. Why? Because they're blind. Maybe Elazar ben Mahabai was saying, only in the morning when they come in swarms. So he was really being mahmir. Or was he saying it on the sefa? On the sefa that we said, that you can trap grasshoppers during the heat. Maybe that's only when they come individually. And Elazar ben Mahabai was saying, but even in the heat, if they come in swarms, it's permissible. So we want to know, was Elazar ben Mahabai being mahmir, or was he being mekel? So Gemara says, Tashema, Hatzad, Hagabim Bish'at Tal Patur. Jeez, no matter what. If you get them in the morning, since they're blinded, you're patur, because you're considered trapped. Bish'at Tashrab Hayab. If you get them in the intense heat, you're hayab, because Mama, they're not trapped. Even during the intensity, if they come in swarms, so you have to just grab them. You don't have to trap them even. You just put your hand out and take them. So that would not be considered having to trap them. Therefore, you're going to be patusis. Therefore, Elazar ben Mahabai was actually being lenient. And we go to the next Mishnah. Tzvi sheniknas lebayit. Let's say a deer entered the house. V'na'al echad b'fanav hayab. And somebody locked the door. Doesn't mean necessarily lock the door. It means close the door where the deer cannot escape. Hayab. So he did the isur of tzad himself. That's obvious. Na'alu shnayim. But if let's say two people close the door, piturin. As we learned earlier in the Masechet, shnayim sha'asa'u. Two people that did a melacha that could have been done by one. So they're both considered piturin. Lo yachol echad lin'ol v'na'alu shnayim, which means if let's say they both could not do it individually, close the door, and they did it together, so that was the case we learned earlier. Ze enu yachol v'ze enu yachol. So the Gemara says, hayavim. In that case, you're going to be hayav. Rabbi Shimon poter, as we learned earlier, Rabbi Shimon and Yochai said, even in the case of Zeh Enu Yachol, Mezeh Enu Yachol, together, both are going to be peturim. Gemara Amar Evirmiya Baraba Amar Shemuel, Hatzad Ari B'Shabbat. Somebody that traps a lion on Shabbat, Eno Hayav, Ad Shichnesenu Legur Zekishelo, Yenar Hayav, until you put him in his cage, which means just trapping him is not enough. A lion is not considered trapped until he's put in a cage that can contain him. So just by putting him in a house or putting him, let's say, you know, tying him up, that's not enough. You have to put him in a place where he cannot escape, and that is only Bet Gurziki Shelo. Baruch Anu Le'olam. Amen, amen.